Welcome back to This Green Earth, the weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And joining us by phone is Mark Adams. He is the author of the book, Tip of the Iceberg, My 3,000-Mile Journey Around Wild Alaska, The Last Great American Frontier. Mark, thanks so much for joining Nell and me on This Green Earth.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start here. Give us a little thumbnail sketch about, first of all, I'm assuming tip of the iceberg means that even a 3,000-mile journey around Alaska is just tip of the iceberg?
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't, really dig into Alaska completely in 100 lifetimes. So even, 3,000 miles mostly by the Alaska Marine Ferry going very slowly, you can only take in so much of it in one trip.
And so this trip was based on another expedition over 100 years ago. Talk about that.
It was. In 1899, the railroad tycoon Edward Harriman decided he wanted to take what had become a sort of fashionable trip along the coast of Alaska. And at that time, people would, as they do now, sort of go up the Inside Passage, which is that, sort of panhandle part of Alaska, and then turn around and come back. So what Harriman said was, first, I want to do the whole coast of Alaska. I'm going to go all the way up the Inside Passage, along the bottom, out through the Aleutians, maybe even out to Siberia, and then back to Nome. This being 1899, the Nome Gold Rush is just about to start. And the second thing he does is he says, and because I'm a rich man, I'm going to take a steamship I own and turn it basically into a gigantic luxury yacht, and I'll have so much space left over that I can invite 24 of America's top natural scientists, writers, and artists to join me sort of as my entertainment. And what's in it for them is that since this is Alaska, they can essentially step off the boat anywhere and start making scientific discoveries because we're in terra incognita.
So
what was his interest or motivation in bringing these natural scientists and artists? Did he have an interest in documenting this? Was he concerned about change or was he just looking at exploration?
When he started, he was not interested in change. He was interested in finding a trophy bear to shoot that he could hang on his wall.
Okay.
and he was interested, I think, in providing sort of a public service. This is sort of the era of Andrew Carnegie paying for libraries and that sort of thing. And I think he thought, look, I can take all these people, which included John Muir of the Sierra Club, George Bird Grinnell, who founded the Audubon Society, really the who's who of American outdoors writing and environmentalism at the time. And, they can see what's going on in Alaska, and my kids can get, a personal tutorial from these guys. And when they come back, what they did was they started publishing these amazingly beautiful bound books that summarized everything that they had seen in Alaska. And that's how I actually did my original research. There are these 12 volumes called the Harriman Alaska Series, and it's thousands and thousands of pages.
So when did this trip start, and how long did it go for?
Their trip or mine?
Their trip. Then we'll get to yours. Okay. That's true.
Yeah. Well, their trip was most of the summer of 1899. My trip was most of the summer of 2016.
Okay. And unlike theirs, your trip was just you?
Mine was just me, yeah. So since I do not have access to a luxury steamship, what I decided was I would retrace most of the route using what are called the Alaska Marine Ferries, which are sort of like the Greyhound bus or Amtrak of Alaska, because most of the people in Alaska, contrary to what you see on reality TV, don't live in the deep wilderness. They live in small towns or cities along the coast. It's a very maritime society up there in Alaska. So you can take this ferry from essentially Seattle, Washington, up the coast of British Columbia, through the Inside Passage, over to Anchorage and all the way out to the Aleutians if you want to. And, with a few small exceptions because the ferry schedule is a little bit sketchy sometimes, that's what I did.
So I think Nell mentioned that once this 1899 expedition was done, there was some writings about it, a book or papers or journals. You brought those with you to kind of compare the changes?
I did. I mean, thankfully, one can now bring an iPad along because these books are like, 3 linear feet if you ever find a library that happens to have them. They're pretty rare. And what they came up with these books, you know, because these were, you know, forward thinkers, people who were keeping an eye on wildlife and such, was they realized that, you know, contrary to the myth of the last frontier, this, you know, this sort of bottomless larder that could be raided for natural resources, things in Alaska in 1899 had already sort of taken a dark turn.
Hmm.
You know, it was the gold rush, and some of these mining companies were pouring things like cyanide into the water supply.
Mm-hmm.
The fur seals and other animals that were, you know, one of the great enticements for America to take over what was then called Russian America in 1867, were close to extinction. They'd been hunted almost to death. And even the salmon, for which Alaska is still famous today, were being fished out because competing canneries from the lower 48 were, you know, blocking entire streams and rivers and taking the whole catch just to prevent their competitors from getting any fish. So what they did in these books was they came back and they told the world, you know, look, the government's got to step in here in Alaska. We've got to start doing some things. Otherwise, you know, we're going to have not the world's most beautiful, pristine wilderness, but, you know, an environmental catastrophe on our hands. And because of their timing and because of who they were able to get to Teddy Roosevelt in Washington, who went from the sort of bored, outdoorsy vice president in 1901 to the very active, hands-on president, thanks to the assassination of William McKinley. And within a year, Roosevelt starts setting aside millions and millions of acres of Alaska. And the things that we see on an inside passage cruise or going into the Chugach Mountains today, those are all areas that were set aside by Teddy Roosevelt because of the things seen and written and photographed by the Harriman Expedition in 1899.
And so were you inspired by that in your own journey and writing of this book to then document what you were seeing in Alaska happening today?
Well, anyone who goes to Alaska now, anyone who lives in Alaska now, knows that it's, you know, the first frontier, as they say, for climate change. Alaska is warming up twice as fast as the rest of the U.S. because the Arctic is warming so much faster. You know, I knew it would be an element in the book. I did not realize how fast things were changing up there. You know, there are cities that are small towns, really, that are falling into the sea from erosion because they've been protected by this sort of ice buffer for years and years. You know, when Captain Cook came through looking for the Northwest Passage in 1788, he couldn't get through the space between Siberia and Alaska because there was a wall of ice. Well, that ice no longer forms, and the towns that are along the coast there, mostly native villages, are being, you know, slammed with waves that couldn't make landfall before, and they are slowly falling into the sea. So, you know, climate change in Alaska is, you know, they're already living in America's climate future, and they're kind of schizophrenic about it because the whole state budget is dependent on oil money. And, of course, the burning of oil is the primary, and oil products is the, you know, primary cause of you know, greenhouse gas. And at the same time, just last year, they decided that they were going to open up oil drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which is probably the last great untouched pristine wilderness in the United States. It's been called Alaska's Serengeti. Well, they're salivating over opening that up so they can get some more oil money coming through.
We're speaking with Mark Adams. He is the author of the book, Tip of the Iceberg, My 3,000-Mile Journey Around Wild Alaska, The Last Great American Frontier. And it's ironic, Mark, that it took, you know, Teddy Roosevelt. If Teddy Roosevelt hadn't taken the actions that he did, like you say, the extractions of natural resources, timber, metals, earth, in a sense, and fish and animals that would have continued unabated. So
yeah,
there's a great success story with respect to what Roosevelt did there, but yet they didn't have climate change back then. That wasn't an issue.
No.
And now
no.
It's completely flipped.
It is. It is. And, of course, the problem they're facing now is much bigger than, you know, preventing people from cutting down all the old-growth timber.
Right.
And, you know, frankly, I don't have an answer. But if you saw the news that came out last week about Antarctica, you know, we're getting to the point where we have to start taking, you know, serious measures to slow this down. You know, it's the climate has you know, warmed and cooled and warmed and cooled over the centuries and millennia. You know, the glaciers have receded and then advanced and then receded and advanced. What's scary right now is the rate of acceleration. You know, I believe it's 10 times faster than has been found in any of the ice cores that climate scientists have studied. You know, and it seems to be accelerating even further. So, you know, to say the answer is to, you know, drill for oil and sort of, you know, stall for time, I don't think that's a good enough answer.
Mm-hmm.
What did you find, you know, in those small towns as you traveled through? What was the culture surrounding climate change or climate action or drilling for oil?
Or their attitudes.
Where did people stand?
Well, first of all, it's hard to find people who are really against oil drilling, because what the state does is they send a royalty check from oil funds every year to every man, woman, and child. It's the opposite of a state sales tax. They pay you for living in the state.
Right.
And all of that money is funded by the oil industry. You know, that said, you'll find small pockets of people who are, you know, sort of Edward Abbey types who are like, you know, let's just tear down the whole, you know, petroleum industry right now. But a lot of what you get is just sort of apathy. People who are like, well, yeah, I mean, you know, the glaciers are melting and the permafrost here is thawing and you know, the highways are buckling because of that. But, you know, there's nothing we can really do. And you hear this again and again. People in China, people in India, they're going to want cars. So are we just going to give up our, you know, airplane vacations and things like that so, you know, that they can ruin the world? That doesn't really seem fair. So a lot of it is just kind of fatalist.
Right. And did you witness actual, say, extra warm days during the summer you were there, or see climate change in action like that?
Well, the time I was there, they announced that the winter of 2015 had been, I think, one of the three warmest on record, going back to the late 1800s. And those three had come in pretty close succession. If not 3 years in a row, then like three of them happened in like a 5 year span or something.
Right.
You know, but you know, when you look at some of the figures that come out, it's like the growing season in Fairbanks has extended by 40% in the last 100 years. You know,
the
days, the frost-free days. Yeah.
Wow.
It's not unthinkable that we're going to see large-scale farming in Alaska within a few decades. You know, there are large, fertile areas, but the growing season is too short right now. Well, you know, as things get warmer, you know, animals are migrating north, plants are migrating north. You know, the whole ecosystem is changing in real time. And that's what's so scary. This is all of America's climate future. It's just, you know, Alaska is the sneak preview, and it doesn't seem to be going very well.
Well, okay. So some people may say, well, that's going to benefit Alaska. So we can start to rely on more of an agricultural. Right.
There is one benefit, you know, the town of Nome, which sort of hit a peak in 1899 and has been, you know, in suspended animation since, they're getting more shipping traffic because shipping routes that used to be impossible because of ice are opening up. You know, ships can send goods from Germany across the top of Russia and Siberia, stop in Nome for refueling, and then move on to, you know, Japan and China. It's easier than going through, say, the Suez Canal. So there are upsides for some people in Alaska. It's just, you know, the long-term results are not going to be very pretty. And I think, you know, it's like they say about when a rich person goes broke, it happens slowly, 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 and then all at once. And I think that may be what we're facing with climate, and Alaska is sort of the first look we're getting at this, and we're not taking it seriously enough.
So take a minute to tell our listeners a little bit, to maybe walk us through your book. What does the book share?
What does it share about Alaska?
It talks about your journey. It talks about this historical journey. What is the book focus on?
Well, the book focuses on two things. It focuses on the 1899 Harriman expedition, and it also focuses on what is happening right now in Alaska. So it sort of compares 1899 to 2016 and afterward, you know, explains a little bit about the culture of Alaska, gives you, you know, sort of a grounding in how things go up there. Because Alaska is, it's America, but it's not America. You know, it's slightly Funhouse America. You know, it's the Funhouse mirrors, or you know, it distorts things a little bit. So you know, I go up there and you know, just talk to as many people as I possibly can, get a feel for these small towns, talk about the beautiful wonders of Alaska. It is absolutely gorgeous. You know, everybody should go to Alaska. Everybody should spend some time in Alaska. It is like the American West times 10. And, you know, most of the book is very much in the mode of, you know, you should go to Alaska, you should see Alaska, it's so beautiful. But, you know, I also have to tell the truth, which is that a lot of these things are imperiled right now.
Well, having spent a summer in Alaska myself, I have to echo those words. It's an incredibly beautiful place that everyone should get a chance
phenomenally
to see.
But don't live there, because you'll dilute the revenue share. And, right? Because I'm sure Alaska.
I don't know. Well, I think you have to live there for a couple of years before you get a check.
Okay.
You got to put in some time.
Exactly. Not automatic.
But it's an interesting point, right? Because more people will maybe want to move there as it gets a little warmer and a little more inviting.
Well, the former state economist told me that one of the success stories for Alaska in the last few years have been retirees coming up there. He said it's one of their growth sectors. So who knows? Who knows what you know lies in the future?
Well, it certainly would be a world that George Bird Grinnell and John Muir and Edward Harriman would not recognize.
Most likely no.
Okay. The book is Tip of the Iceberg, My 3,000-Mile Journey Around Wild Alaska, The Last Great American Frontier. The author is Mark Adams. It's available now in bookstores and on Amazon, et cetera. And, Mark, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us this morning.
Thank you, guys. What a pleasure.
Oh, and while you got it, do you have a website?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Mark Adams Books, M-A-R-K, AdamsBooks.com.
MarkAdamsBooks.com. Simple enough. Thanks so much, Mark.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too.